Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahwai. The situation in Syria has witnessed a dangerous spillover in the 18 months of its unrest. Artillery fire from Syria struck a Turkish border town and killed five people, and Turkey retaliated with a response which, according to some reports, killed a number of Syrian soldiers. The first such occurrence. Even though Turkey has stated that it has no interest in war with Syria, isn't it already engaged in a war by training and arming, and even harboring the Syrian armed opposition? Well, in this news analysis, we will weigh in on whether this is the beginning of a war between Turkey and NATO on the one side and Syria on the other side. And on a wider context, we'll take a look at how far or how close is the world community on reaching a peaceful political resolution.
Tensions between Turkey and Syria are on the rise. A mortar shell from Syria that left five people dead and several wounded in a Turkish border town is turning the tensions up a notch. Turkey responded by shelling Syrian targets. The situation has raised concerns among other countries.
As far as the incident between Syria and Turkey goes, it's a great concern for us. The situation is deteriorating with every day coming.
Turkey's parliament has given the go-ahead to the government to carry out cross-border military operations against, quote, hostile forces. Turkish Deputy Prime Minister Basir Atalay says the parliament approval is no mandate for war. But fears of the outbreak of a serious conflict have already provoked criticisms.
This incident, this mortar shelling the Turkish side came right after the assassination of two Kurdish, you know, insurgents against Turkey. Second, the mortar could be on the hand of the insurgent. And third, there is a third party always, especially the opposition, who has interest to create conflict between Turkey and Syria.
Public opinion in Turkey is also against the start of a war. Many social media users in Turkey have been reacting strongly against the possibility of war with Syria. Before the parliament approved the green light for a cross-border activity, anti-war protesters made their voices heard to Turkish lawmakers. Analysts say the exact cause of Wednesday mortar fire should be looked into carefully. They also say the chances of a war are distant at current juncture.
In Turkey, there is an Alevi population of over 25%, and also the main secularists in Turkey object to any military intervention in Syria, and this might thwart Turkey from intervening eventually in Syria.
The Turkish government had for long drawn criticisms at home and abroad over adopting policies that only helped worsen the situation in Syria. Ankara particularly is criticized for harboring Syrian insurgents and providing them with arms and ammunition. Wednesday's mortar fire from Syria into Turkey has escalated the tensions between the two nations. It has also brought to the forefront the role that Ankara plays in fanning the flames of unrest in the neighboring country and the huge risks that instability in Syria entails not only for Turkey, but for the entire region.
Let me introduce our guest to get this analysis going. Middle East expert Jihad Murakata joins us from Beirut. We have author and historian Webster Griffin Tarpley, who joins us from Washington. We have the vice chair of the Institute for Policy Studies, Sal Landau, who joins us from Berkeley. Gentlemen, welcome. John Murakata, I'd like to start off with you. What do you make of this scenario that has unfolded between Syria and Turkey?
Nothing much. I feel that there was an incident. The Syrians did not mean it. And as far as the Turkish are concerned, they have drawn a line in the sand. And they do not intend to go any further. And neither does NATO, by the way. NATO made clear that it is not worth going any further than just pure retaliation. But the Turkish authorities have said since the plane incident, when the Turkish plane was shut down, that they would change the rules of engagement. And they have changed the rules of engagement. And they do not want to go any further. And the Syrians immediately apologized, because as far as they're concerned, they think that they do not intend to make any thing out of it. And of course, the foreign minister of Russia, the Russian foreign minister, made it clear that there is no point in getting out of hand.
Well, Mr. Griffin, Trackley, don't you find it a little odd that NATO, you would think, would be itching to get into Syria somehow? You would think. I mean, perhaps you can shed more light on that. And this would be a perfect opportunity for that, given that one of its member countries has been shelled from Syria. But that's not the stance. Our guest, Ajad Merkata, also stated that. How do you see it?
I would not be confident about the peaceful evolution of all this. I think we have to go back a little bit. Remember, the difference of Obama compared to Bush-Cheney is that Bush-Cheney were the advocates of direct U.S. military action. U.S. would bomb and invade countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, others. With Obama, it's much more nuanced. It's based on deception, dissembling, and treachery. And the strategy is called buck passing. Buck passing means if you have an ally like Turkey, which is showing very disturbing signs of independent action, and then you have a country like Syria, which is aligned with Russia and China, the way to deal with that is not to have a direct U.S. military attack, but to play one against the other. In particular, I'm thinking of 2010. Turkey was showing signs, I think, of world leadership in some ways. Turkey combined with Brazil to try to cool down the question of the Iranian nuclear program and back the world away from a general war over that. That's very positive. But that alarmed people here in Washington. So the result of that was Obama got on the phone with Erdogan, and he promised that he would make Erdogan great, that Turkey would become a regional hegemon. And by the way, they were going to go after Syria, and the Syrian government would fall. The Syrian government would go down like Tunisia with just a couple of days. And Erdogan and Davutoglu bought into that, and they've now gone way out on a limb. I understand about 18% of the Turkish population is interested in military action against Syria. So there's a tremendous majority against military action. But since Erdogan and Davutoglu control the main party, they can get this vote, which now takes us a step further towards some larger armed confrontation. It's beginning to look more and more like the Spanish Civil War. And remember, if Hillary Clinton gets on the telephone with Davutoglu, she's not telling him to cool it. She's saying, assert your rights, get out in front even more. So because of their vanity and ambition and related factors, Erdogan and Davutoglu have gone very far down the road. And you wonder, is there a way back for them? I would urge them to find a way back, to pull back from this. This is not in Turkey's interest. If we get a conflict between Turkey and Syria, the one who's laughing will be the United States, because they will have disposed of two countries that were resisting the imperial dictates coming from here.
Well, what do you suggest in terms of Turkey finding a way back there, Whipsa Griffin Tarpley? Don't you think, do you think that that's a possibility at any point? Maybe they might be mulling that, as you said, in terms of the breakdown. Go ahead.
The entire rebellion in Syria is artificial. It's fomented from the outside. These are death squads that NATO has brought in. They've shipped them in from Libya by means of an airlift. They've gathered them from half the world. If Turkey would simply say, we're going to close our border, we're not going to allow these killers to use bases inside Turkey, this would come to a rather quick end. And of course, Lebanon, Syria, and the Kurdish entity would also have to go along.
But
mainly it's Turkey right now concerning Aleppo.
Okay. Mr. Merkata, we'll get to you for a response that I see you have. But let me just bring in Sal Landau here. And I'd like to expand, Sal Landau, on what Wessel Griffin Tarpley said, disturbing signs by Turkey of independent action. It certainly looks like that. I mean, Ibrahim Kalin, the foreign policy advisor to Prime Minister Erdogan, he said Turkey retaliated without declaring war, but doesn't the resolution reached in the parliament lay the groundwork for war when Turkey deems it necessary? A quick reminder here, authorized the government to send Turkish forces to foreign countries with the administration determining the where, the scope, the numbers, and the time of such deployment.
I think it is a dangerous situation, and I don't think it should be underplayed. I mean, I have the feeling that the Archduke might be visiting Sarajevo any day now. I mean, laying the conditions for a much larger conflict as the one that started World War I. I mean, the fact is that Syria, which has bent over backwards to please the United States over the last 10 years, they tortured people that were sent there for rendition. They tipped the United States off about possible attacks against U.S. bases and property there in the region. And I remember when I was in Syria and a government official said, why is it that Washington doesn't respond to our deeds? And I said, no good deed goes unpunished. Syria is, after all, essentially allied with Iran. And that is what is really in disfavor. And I think it's true that the West, along with Saudi Arabia, is arming and training the foreign troops that are going into Syria and fomenting much of the violence that is occurring there on an unprecedented scale. It is very dangerous, and I think you have Russia on one side and China also, which is opposing Western action, and then you have the NATO powers using essentially Turkey. I don't understand President Erdogan's ambition in this particular case. The Syrians have told him very clearly they don't want to go to war with Turkey. It's been a peaceful situation. I also don't understand why Israel is supporting this move against President Assad, because Assad has maintained stability on the Golan Heights. And if a new regime replaces this in Turkey, it may very well be led by very fundamentalist jihadists who will not respect that Golan Heights border. So it's a very dangerous situation, and I think the West should back off, and President Obama should be advised to do so immediately.
Well, Ajad Markada, you had a statement, I believe, that you wanted to make in reference to Mr. Tarpley there.
Yes, first of all, with regards to those people fighting in Syria, he made it as if it was just foreigners fighting in there. Well, I'm sorry, there is a large part of the Syrian population which is fighting the Assad regime. If until now, after 19 months, the gentleman has not realized that the Syrians were fighting the Syrian regime, then we have a major problem here in the discussion. I don't think we can carry it any further. As far as Israel is concerned and Bashar al-Assad is concerned,
I agree totally.
As far as Bashar al-Assad concerned and Israel, I think Bashar al-Assad has been more an enemy of Israel than a friend. And the one who has been a friend of Israel and has kept the Golan quiet is obviously his father, President Hafez al-Assad. President Bashar has carried on war against Israel with various means through Hezbollah in Lebanon. So Israel is not interested, as you say, in keeping the Assad regime quiet. And also, there is a lot of speculation about what is going to replace the regime of President Bashar al-Assad. I think that the replacement of President Bashar al-Assad is not what everybody seems to think. Islamists here and there and what have you. Yes, there are Islamists in Syria, and there are non-Islamists in Syria. In Egypt, you have more Islamists than you have in Syria. And yet, political picture in Egypt is very different than what people thought about Islamists. Islamists are not a danger. It's just, they are just an Islamist, but they are not a danger to anybody. And you should respect democratically elected people. If Islamists come to power, there are not only Islamists in Syria, there are Christians in Syria, there are secular people in Syria, there are everything in Syria. Well, so if you had a proper election in Syria.
Mr. Markado, what do you think of the Al-Nusra Front? What do you think of the Al-Nusra Front? Are you familiar with them?
No.
The Al-Qaeda linked Al-Nusra Front, they claim responsibility for that. I'm sure the series of explosions that you heard that killed, 40 people, this wounding 90 more, which is another sign of terrorist involvement. How many of these are involved in Syria? So we can get an idea of what you say are Syrians who have turned against the government compared to what we get time and again of these groups such as this one.
There are groups. Can I speak here for a minute?
Let Mr. Morikade, and we'll get to you, Mr. Landau. Go ahead, Mr. Morikade. Yeah.
Okay.
There are groups who use means that the Syrian government also uses in terms of car bombs and explosions and so on. However, what is their role in a future Syria?
That's a great question. Before you answer it, let's bring in Tarpley. We'll come back to you. Webster Griffin Tarpley, if you can answer Mr. Morikade there, of how much these terrorists are going to put back any form of a political resolve, especially when it comes to the future of a Syrian government, were there to be one, if Assad was to go. I mean, doesn't these groups demote that fact when they keep getting added to the pot, so to say?
Well, there's a violent opposition, which is supported, first of all, financially and logistically. And this is done by Saudi Arabia, by Qatar, by the United Arab Emirates, with the general approval of NATO. We know that there are CIA officers and U.S. Joint Special Operations Command people in southern Turkey that are directing traffic. They do the logistic function to organize that. We know that there's a NATO base in Iskenderun where Libyan fighters were flown in. We know that there's an operation called Adana, or a place called Adana near the Incirlik NATO Air Force base in Turkey. All of these are used for the logistical backup. And indeed, a lot of the main force fighters are foreigners. There are people from all over the North Africa, Middle East, all the way out to Pakistan, from Chechnya all the way to Somalia. A lot of them are there. We've had reports of even people recruited in France, right? People of the Mohammed Merah type. I don't think it's a question of Islamist or not Islamist. The question is that these are Saudi networks. These are Saudi networks, and they're there to destroy the Syrian state. The reason that they can't unite is because NATO doesn't want them to unite. NATO doesn't want a central government of Syria ever again. They want the 300 squabbling groups. The Syrian National Council is a bad joke. The Free Syrian Army is essentially a congeries of Al-Qaeda and others, of Salafis and Saudis and others. So this is a complete mess. And there is no government there. Everybody can see that. There's no leader. There's no government. The entire thing depends on foreign help, foreign logistics, foreign money, and again, foreign fighters. Now, of course, some Syrians are then sucked in. They're drawn into this for various reasons. They become fellow travelers. They're carried away. Some of them have no choice. They're forced to do it at gunpoint. But again, the question is causality. If you cut off the outside inputs, the entire thing will calm down relatively rapidly.
And I want to get your response to that, Jihad Morikade. Please keep Webster Griffin Tarpley's thoughts there. But Sad Landau, you had a response. Go ahead.
Yes, I visited Syria 5 times over the last 10 years and made a film there. And I would agree that the initial protest against the Assad government was legitimate. And it was because President Assad did not respond to the deteriorating economic conditions, to the high unemployment, and to the anti-democratic and corrupt features of his own government. But once that protest got underway, the violent people seemed to grab a hold of it. And I would have to take issue with our guest from Lebanon in that I interviewed an imam in the city of Hama in 2005, and he said, when we, the majority, the Sunnis, take over, we will send the heathens back to the heathen country, meaning the Christians would be sent back to Lebanon. And I said, well, what would you do with the Alawites? And he said, they will get what's coming to them. And that was not, in my mind, a statement that led me to believe that there would be no extremism in the next regime in Syria if Assad was replaced. The initial mistakes, however, were made by President Assad in not responding properly to the outrage that people had over the declining economics, the corruption in his government, and the anti-democratic features. Those are absolutely true. But the foreign penetration of that movement has also been decisive in escalating the war. And if it's not stopped, all hell is going to break loose in the region.
Okay, Jihad Markare, please respond to what Buster Griffin Tarpley said, if you remember those statements. I'd like to find out what you think.
All I can say is that as far as the Mufti or the Sheikh in Hama can say, he can dream whatever he wants to dream, but at the end of the day, he's not alone. And he cannot do anything on his own because there is no intention whatsoever, as far as the Sunnis are concerned, to create a regional war or a sectarian war in the region. They know that there are so many different political axes in the region, whether it's Shia axis, Sunni, Christian, West, and so on. Today, ethnic cleansing does not work anymore. So I don't believe they can believe whatever they want, but what they can do is nothing. We have seen it in Egypt. When the Islamists want power in Egypt, they cannot go ahead and get the Copts, the Coptics out of power or attack churches and so on. With regards to the foreign intervention, I would like to say once more, the Syrian regime has lost legitimacy with regards to the United Nations itself, because the United Nations itself regarded the Syrian regime as a rogue state a long time ago. They still accept it because it is there in the United Nations, okay? But they regard it as a rogue state, and as far as the Security Council is concerned, arming the Syrian opposition is not really an issue anymore. Everybody is arming the Syrian opposition, like the Russians are arming the Syrian army and the Iranians are arming the Syrian army. So I don't see where the problem lies. If you say that there is a Western intervention on behalf of Syrian opposition, I would say there is a Russian and Iranian intervention on behalf of Syrian regime. And the Syrian regime is illegitimate, according to everybody. There is no legitimacy to the Syrian regime, since the Syrian regime has no free and fair elections.
Okay, we're running quickly out of time. So, Webster Griffin Tarpley, go ahead.
I'm afraid there is no such consensus in the world, and this is exactly the point.
We had the
consultative
Nations.
Conference in Tehran of the actual friends of Syria and essentially people who want to avoid military escalation, Russia, China, India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Venezuela, Cuba, Kazakhstan, really more than half the world, 30 countries, more than half the world, and they are trying to avoid the military blow-up. The NATO desire is to have this entire thing destroy
Syria. There is 120 countries
who
think different.
Go as far as possible in damaging Turkey. So this rogue state, the definition of a rogue state is illegitimate. That definition of rogue state is contrary to international law, and that's a propaganda tool of the U.S. and the British and others.
According to you or according to me? According to the U.N.
Sal Landau, you're going to have the final statements.
The United Nations, there is no consensus of the five permanent members about illegitimacy or rogue states. There is no such thing.
Sal Landau, go ahead.
I think that the problem is not illegitimate. I think the rogue state is the disobedient state. That is, Syria aligning itself with Iran was the disobedience to the West. I mean, after all, Syria had agreed to torture people for the United States. And the Syrian regime is no more illegitimate, let's say, than the Saudi regime or the Bahrain or some of the Emirates. I mean, free elections, please. You can't really use that criteria anymore because it doesn't, in the region, it just doesn't equate. So, I mean, the problem now is to de-escalate this conflict. And that means both sides have to stop fighting. That is, both sides have to declare that there's no future in continuing this battle. The rebels, on the one hand, the Free Syrian Army, and the Assad government have to sit down at the table, and that pressure has to come from the West and from Russia. Both sides have to get together and agree, no more arms into this region, stop the fighting. Otherwise, all hell is going to break loose, and it's going to spread beyond the region, is my fear.
Okay, we're going to end it there. Thank you very much. Let me thank our guest, Middle East expert Jihad Markata from Beirut. Thank you. Author and historian Whipser Griffin Tarpley from Washington. And you just heard from Vice Chair of Institute for Policy Studies, Sal Landau there from Berkeley. And thank you for watching another edition of the News Analysis. To send us any comments or questions, newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikko Vitakva and the entire team, it's goodbye.